It's Monty and Rias versus Movies. I'm Monty.
I'm Rias.
And we are watching fantasy movies.
Yes, we are. Many of which have been not so great.
Yeah. I love the genre in theory, but a lot of the specific fantasy movies are bad.
Unlike the post-apocalyptic movies, which are all brilliant.
Post-apocalyptic movies have a very narrow range of quality, is something I think we learned last year. Like, there are some great ones. I'm going to say maybe five, although I'm not sure I could name five.
Okay.
And the rest are terrible.
And sure.
Terrible in a really narrow band where they're all the same.
Okay.
Fantasy movies have a more populated range where some are bad and some are good.
But there's nothing in between.
Anyway, we watched Conan the Barbarian.
Which I think is a good fantasy movie.
I agree. It has great visuals. Like one of the IMDb trivias that did not blow my mind said, a lot of it is based on Frank Frazetta. And
really? Frank Frazetta paintings, an influence on the Conan the Barbarian movie. Who would have guessed?
Well, I think there's a Conan the Barbarian movie that doesn't take Frank Frazetta as an influence, and that makes it bad.
That's not what makes that movie bad. What infuriates me about that movie is that they didn't give him blue contact lenses.
So you're an eye color person. Like,
oh, not all the, I'm not all the time an eye color person.
Were you mad about Harry Potter's eye color?
No, but I am mad because Conan having steely blue eyes is something that is described over and over and over again in the comic books and source material.
Does Arnold Schwarzenegger have blue eyes?
No.
Well, now hang on.
Never mind.
Less than 3 minutes into this, and I have already nailed you to the wall.
I am nailed to a wall, like the tree of woe.
I think what makes this movie, the 1982 Conan the Barbarian, starring Arnold Schwarzenegger and James Earl Jones and Mako and Sandahl Bergman and somebody who plays Subutai, and directed by John Milius, I think what makes it good is that they stripped out all the plot.
Right. The plot in this movie is super easy to follow. Conan's village is destroyed and he is enslaved and he's mad about it.
So, the thing that turns a small child into Arnold Schwarzenegger is being strapped to a wheel and pushing it for 20 years or whatever.
Yes. You would think that would just give you strong leg muscles, but apparently it works the abs, the shoulders, the arms. It is a full body workout pushing a wheel in the middle of a desert. And we never find out what that wheel is for. I thought it was a grindstone, but now I think maybe it's a pump for a well.
Yeah.
It's probably a well.
They show a wheel inside it turning, so it could be grinding things, but it's not anywhere near crops. But what I like about it is they don't explain it. I feel like at some point the script had a scene where they say, strap him to the wheel so that he can blank. But you don't need that. You just need to see him strapped to a wheel and then walk around it a few times.
And then see a slightly more muscular, older actor strapped to a wheel a couple times.
And then it snows, and then he's worn a rivet in the dirt, and now he's Arnold Schwarzenegger.
He's not like the first person they strapped to that wheel. You would think that the dirt would already have had a divot.
Yeah. I wonder what happened to the other kids that they strapped to the wheel. I think the implication is they all died, but
yeah.
Conan, through his iron will or something, survived.
Well, did they replace them with other children then?
No, when they take him away, he was the only person left on the wheel.
Okay.
Because you don't need anyone else when Conan the Barbarian's pushing your wheel.
Yeah, but then they took him away to be a gladiator, and now what are they going to have to do? Raid more villages?
I don't know. Like,
are they done? Has the wheel done its job? Maybe they have drained the aquifer they were using the wheel to pump.
The impression we are given is that they attack that village to steal children. And there's a bunch of children.
Oh, yeah. They kill everyone in the village and just steal the children and then take them out into the desert and and make them push a wheel around.
It doesn't...
That seems... I didn't seem efficient.
And what I like about it is that it's not efficient and not explained. Just, you know, it's an evil cult that worships snakes and is doing evil things.
So they're going to kidnap these children and strap them to a wheel. I don't know. I know that the Robert E. Howard stories talk about how Conan rose from being a slave, but I don't think they really go into much depth about what he did as a slave. So,
yeah, I mean, let's talk about Robert E. Howard for a second.
Robert E. Howard, yes.
He was a contemporary and of
the same circle as Lovecraft.
Yep, and he did better Lovecrafty stories. Like, he's a much more fun writer, and his cosmic horror monsters tended to have more personality than Lovecraft's.
Right, and he tended to write... He's written a lot of stuff that's really fun. I highly recommend reading his non-Conan stories.
Yeah, Cull and such.
Cull is good. No, I mean non-fantasy stories.
Oh, okay.
He did a bunch of stories about this guy that just goes out and gets in fights all the time. Maybe called The Mucker? I'm not sure, but his humor is really good. He writes some humor stories. He did a lot of Western stuff because he lived in Texas. And all of it's worth reading.
And one of his creations was Conan the Barbarian, he created him as Conan the Cimmerian and portrayed Conan at different points in his life. Here he is a barbarian. Here he is a philosopher king looking back on his life and that sort of thing. He really didn't write that much Conan.
Not really.
Other people like Elsbreg de Camp came along later and really fleshed him out.
Yeah. Not that he needed fleshing out. He always had mighty thews.
Oh, this is the thewed guy.
Yeah.
So, he's a slave. He gets taken away to a gladiator pit and very quickly becomes an expert gladiator. And I feel like it's 45 minutes in where he says his first dialogue when someone says, Conan, what is best in life?
And we all know what the answer to that is.
Yes, we do. Something, something, Lamentations of the Women. It was very popular among a certain class of D&D player.
To kill the enemies, to drive them out before you, to hear the lamentation of their women. I'm not saying I'm a certain class of D&D nerd, but this movie had a very large influence of me when I was a certain class of D&D nerd.
So he escapes from being a gladiator, falls into a tomb, steals a sword from a dead person.
Right. We're never really told who the dead person is, but he does say Crom, and so maybe it... I don't know.
The internet says that is an Atlantean.
Oh, an Atlantean. You know, from Atlanta. Got it.
Yeah. Probably Ted Turner.
Probably.
He meets a wolf witch who has sex with him, and then he throws her into the fire.
Yeah, that whole scene is weird. I'm not sure what it... Okay, so what he needs to get are directions to a specific city.
Yes, he wants to go kill Thulsa Doom, who he knows as the leader of the snake cult.
Right, Thulsa Doom is the guy that was there when his family was killed, so he wants revenge. So he gets out of the gladiator business, he goes to the tomb, he gets himself a magic sword... I think it's like a +2. It's not a great sword.
It's not magic.
It is 2. Shut up. He gets himself a magic sword. It is a +2.
Fine.
And then he needs to find out where Thulsa Doom is. And a lady who's camped out by where the Atlantean guy is says, come to my tent. Let me warm you by my fire.
And she does.
And she does. And while they are having sex... She tells him directions to where they're going.
And then her teeth get all pointy and she screams.
And he throws her aside, literally, like
yeah.
Over the fire. But they never... The sex and the sounds that are made during the sex do not sound like sounds of pleasure.
Yes. Also, I'm just going to say this. Arnold Schwarzenegger is a very...
Muscular
person, very compelling visuals a lot of the time, like on the Tree of Woe. I don't think I would want to have sex with him.
No.
He's very big.
Look, there are plenty of people for whom that is their type. No muscle shaming here. But,
the amount of muscles and... I don't want sculpting.
I'd
be afraid of damaging him.
I don't want that on top of me. It looks like it's heavy. Muscle is very dense.
Yeah. So he goes outside and he immediately sees his new pal, Subutai, who introduces himself as a thief. I haven't eaten in 4 days. I'm a thief, he says.
And yeah, Subutai is mysteriously tied to a rock. Just in the middle of nowhere.
And Conan says, oh, you're my new pal. And they go to a town and they have adventures.
Pretty much, yeah.
And
then they decide that one of their adventures, they're going to go together to climb the Tower of the Serpent.
Yep.
That's not phallic in the least.
They're planning on stealing a giant ruby from the snake temple, which they do.
But on the way there, they meet another thief, a lady thief named Valeria, who is also on her way to steal the ruby.
Her name is Sandahl Bergman, and she has amazing feathered hair.
She does.
The kind of feathered hair you would expect from the person who played Muse Number One in Xanadu.
She is Muse Number One. And she's probably the only one in the movie that has their real hair. Let's talk a little bit about the wigs in this movie.
The wigs in this movie are terrible. Everybody's got these really, really long, straight hair wigs, which make the one guy look like Lemmy.
He does look a little like Lemmy, but that's also the mustache helps.
And the leather jacket he's got later on.
Yeah.
But James Earl Jones, as a black man, the only black man in this movie,
has the worst of wigs. I don't know.
That's not your hair, James Earl Jones. We know
that. That's definitely not James Earl Jones's hair. I don't think I've seen James Earl Jones with hair.
Yeah.
Which makes it easy for them to glue a wig on. And also, the wig has bangs, and they glue it on in a different place each scene so that the length of the bangs varies depending on the scene. Sometimes they're way back from his eyes. Sometimes they're a little closer. It's long, straight hair that looks like it's been under a hat for way too long. It is...
It's weird that a movie where the hero is so strong visually, like Arnold Schwarzenegger looks amazing a lot of the time, just waving a sword around, but can't really deliver dialogue.
Right. And then your villain...
doesn't look great, but he has the voice of James Earl Jones.
Yeah, so you're going to listen to him.
So
I would have liked to have seen Jeffrey Holder in that role.
Jeffrey Holder. Name a few movies with Jeffrey Holder in them.
He's best known for, is it Live and Let Die, the James Bond movie where they go to Haiti?
Yeah.
He's the guy that plays Baron Samedi in that. He's most well known for that. He's also in a movie called Swashbuckler, which is a terrible movie that I absolutely love. And he plays a guy with a lot of knives that I've based several Dungeons & Dragons characters on.
I believe he's also in a 7-Up commercial where he says, "Smiles, everybody, smiles!"
He will tell you about the Uncola nut. He has an amazing voice. And he was a professional dancer.
Like, yeah.
That was his main gig. Acting was something he did now and then. He was like a... incredible dancer and choreographer, and I think it would have been fun to have him in the movie because he's very tall. He's kind of a giant. He would have been looked like he may have been towering over Schwarzenegger, which might have been kind of cool, but he's also much lankier than James Earl Jones and has so much dance training that he could be doing some cool wizardy stuff, waving his arms around and such, that James Earl Jones may not have been able to do.
Yes, to give you an idea of what Jeffrey Holder looks like when he takes off his shirt, he is associated with the Alvin Ailey American Dance Theater.
Yes.
And James Earl Jones...
is associated with being an amazing actor.
Yeah, so he does not take... he's the only one that does not take his shirt off.
He doesn't need to. He's James Earl Jones.
So the...
Although he does take his shirt off in the movie The Great White Hope, and he's pretty...
oh, that's true,
he's
yeah.
pretty buff in that.
So they steal a ruby from a snake temple. They proceed to go to town and live it up and immediately get arrested.
Right. They live it up for quite some time, I believe.
Yeah, this
because
is...
because the narrator Mako comes on and tells us that they live it up for a long time. At some point during the living it up, Sandahl Bergman's character, Valeria, falls in love with Conan, and he maybe with her, who can tell? You know, Schwarzenegger doesn't have the range to be...
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is what I mean when I say they took out the plot. Like, the king arrests them and says, "You need to save my daughter. Here's rubies upon rubies upon rubies. And Arnold goes off on his own without Sandahl Bergman or Subutai. And we don't really see them not...
for a long time. We don't know what they're doing. I hope they're setting up a crime syndicate using all those rubies.
Yeah.
And I want them to live happily ever in the city. But no. They show up later.
But since this is about when he shows up, I want to talk about Mako.
Okay. So at some point, well, this is after the tree. Mako's the guy that saves Ree.
Yeah, but we see him before that. We see him when he goes to the weird empty place with the skeletal horses. We just saw this movie.
Okay, so he does go to an empty place with skeletal horses.
And then Mako jumps out and says, ha 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 ha, I'm a weird wizard. That's his introduction. That's so we know who he is later on. Mako is the narrator of the movie. At the beginning of a fantasy movie, you need someone to say things like, between the years when the oceans drank Atlantis and the gleaming cities and the years of the rise, the sons of Arius. See?
Yeah.
Oceans drank Atlantis. Atlanteans. That makes sense.
That explains the Atlantean right there.
Now, Mako is a really fun actor. I used to associate him with a Cirque du Soleil movie called Alegria.
He's in that?
Yeah.
I don't remember him being in that. I just remember Whoopi Goldberg scaring me.
Well,
she's a clown.
Mako is the main guy in it, but only at the beginning. Right at the beginning, there's an old person telling the story.
Oh, and that's Mako.
Yeah.
Okay.
But now I associate Mako with being Uncle Iroh in Avatar The Last Airbender.
Guys, he was so good in that role.
And that makes this movie narrated by Uncle Iroh, and it's better now, I think.
It is. We have a better association for Mako. We're like, oh, Uncle Iroh's doing that. He's probably having some tea in the recording booth.
So, and he shows up as a wizard, basically says, oh, you want to know where Thulsa Doom is? Well, there's a snake cult over that way.
He should have just gone to Mako first. Then he doesn't have to sleep with somebody that turns into a monster and gets thrown through the fire.
Yeah. So
maybe that's a cut scene.
So let's see what happens next.
So then Conan goes off on his own. He picks some flowers to wear around his neck, and he tries to infiltrate the snake cult.
Right. He does that by finding a priest who's slightly taller than him and kind of winks and says, can we go over there?
And the priest is a gay character.
Who says, yeah, we can. We can go over there right now.
And then Conan punches him and steals his clothes.
Now, I don't think that scene was homophobic. I was expecting it to be.
I was expecting it to be a lot more homophobic. I think that it is in a way that the audience is supposed to feel like, oh, yeah, it's okay for Conan to punch this guy and steal his clothes. I mean, the guy's obviously gay, and that's pretty gross.
But he is okay for him to punch a snake cult priest and steal his clothes.
Yeah. He punches some other people and steals their clothes.
Yeah. So he's disguised as a member of the snake cult and is discovered immediately. And Thulsa Doom speaks with him, basically says, I don't remember you. I killed a lot of villages in my youth. This would have been a good time for the line in Street Fighter, which is, for you, it was the worst day of your life. For M. Bison, it was Tuesday.
Yeah. That's
such a good line.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
It's that vibe where Conan wants revenge and Thulsa Doom has no idea who he is. Thulsa Doom shows off his power by directing one of his minions to jump off a cliff.
Yep, a lady minion.
Midsummer style.
Yeah, she does. And it was set a record for world's longest free fall stunt jump by a woman at the time.
Yep. And then they...
That's pretty cool.
Say... Then Thulsa Doom tells him to contemplate this on the Tree of Woe.
Whoa.
And that's where he gets crucified on a tree, and he looks great.
He looks... Not everyone looks this good crucified to a tree. And it's a real good-looking tree with a lot of gnarly branches and some vultures, both live and animatronic.
Yep. A vulture comes down, tries to eat him, and he bites it back, which is pretty badass.
Yep. I remember that from the Robert E. Howard book.
And... eventually, Subutai shows up, and we cut to Subutai and Valeria and Mako, who I don't think has a name, all getting ready to save him.
Right. They show up and get him off the tree, but he's pretty much dead at that point.
So they need some sorcery to save him.
So, Subutai and Valeria drag him to Mako, and Valeria gets all bitchy about it, which, come on, just, you need to save him, and if you don't, I will kill you. What? Come on.
Yeah.
He's a wizard. You got a pocket full of giant rubies.
So Mako draws on his hands and face.
Yes, with some eyeliner.
And then they leave him out on a rope hammock for demons to come.
Right, and if the demons are unable to take... Okay, we don't know why this happens, but if the demons are will come and try to take him, then he will die. But if they are unable to take him, he will be saved.
And the drawings make the demon stop, and Valeria goes off. It's not clear, and I like that. You get the idea.
Yeah, it's just some... Here's what they want you to know. It's some kind of sorcery. Deal with it.
Yeah. There's what would now be CGI demons, but at the time was hand-animated demons.
They come out and climb all over him and try to get him, and then Valeria jumps on top of him to hold him down so the demons can't take him, and she punches some of them, which is weird because they're little CG or little animated demons.
And he's fine.
Yeah. Eventually he's fine. Yeah.
We see him waving his sword around, doing a little kata.
You know the scene.
Yeah. Now it's time to attack again. And we cut to them sneaking into the caves.
You know, every snake temple.
Everyone.
Every single evil temple always has a back way in. So don't be fooled. Go in there in the first place.
Yeah. Don't sneak in the front way. There's people looking. People are going to be like, where's that tall gay priest? Hey, it's been replaced by a priest who's a little shorter and two times as wide.
Yeah.
Sneaking in, we see some eviscerated bodies and people carrying
right,
a cauldron.
Right, because the tunnels lead to the kitchens. We see some clearly foam rubber corpses.
Yes.
Being cut up and poured into a cauldron, and they're making some kind of a gross thing.
Yep.
Then we follow the guys who are carrying the cauldron up to the throne room.
This is the orgy room.
Well, there's also a throne in it.
Okay, that's true. We don't know whether there's a throne in every room or orgies in every room.
Or whether they're just having an orgy in the throne room for some reason.
Yeah, Thulsa Doom is watching the orgy.
But he doesn't seem real interested in it.
Especially once he turns into a snake.
No, then he turns into a snake and slithers off.
And... our heroes attack, just go crazy
right,
on this
and there's
place.
A girl who is next to Thulsa Doom's throne hanging onto his leg in a very Frank Frazetta style. And if we had been paying attention, we would know that she is the princess who they are supposed to rescue.
This is one of those scenes where I am certain there was a scene where someone said, grab her, the princess we're supposed to save. We don't see her again until...
the end of the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's great.
Kind of. But we do see Valeria tie her up and drag her away.
Yeah, and Valeria kills a couple people on her way out.
Yeah, she's a badass.
And she gets killed somehow.
Yeah, Thulsa Doom shoots her with a snake.
Oh, yeah.
An arrow made out of a snake, and she dies in Conan's arms. But as she dies, she says, or earlier in the movie, she said, were you alive and I dead, I would come back from the grave to save you.
It's true, she did say that. So now we have to bury her. They put her up on a pyre and burn her, and she burns really good. There's a really funny scene to me where...
yeah, the death of Valeria is a comedy highlight.
Subutai cries. Mako asks him, why are you crying? And Subutai says, Conan will not cry, so I'll cry for him, which is great in character because, of course, Conan wouldn't cry. Conan is a big, beefy, manly man. And also, Schwarzenegger
has not got those acting chops quite yet.
Yeah.
He's young. It's early in his career. It's his first movie.
It's his
Other than Pumping Iron, which
and
is
Hercules in New York. And also Party at Kitty and Studs, I think. No, that's Stallone. I think Hercules in New York was before this.
I don't think Hercules in New York is Stallone. Maybe it is.
At any rate, it's very early in Stallone. His acting career, and...
he's not going to be able to...
He's very, very good in this movie.
Yeah, but he's good in the way that Keanu Reeves is good in some movies.
Yeah.
You play to his strengths, and Arnold's strength is being a big, beefy-looking dude who happens to look like Conan.
Yeah, if you need somebody to look like he is really pushing a wheel, and it's... difficult, but he's doing it, and you think, my God, that man is so strong to be achieving this thing. Arnold Schwarzenegger will do it and do it great. If you need somebody to shed tears over the loss of the woman he slept with once.
Arnold's not there yet at this point in his career.
And in that case, I think it's great to have somebody else say, I'm going to tag in, I'm going to cry and display the emotion because the lead actor can't do it. I really think it's a great move.
Yeah, I think it works.
Now they set up an ambush at the place where they found those skeletal horses that time.
Oh, right, because now that they've stolen the girl, they know Thulsa Doom's looking for them. So they go to the City of Dead Gods.
Yep.
That's what I'm calling this place.
They set up a whole bunch of ambushes, and then Thulsa Doom's men show up on horses and get killed in ways that make me worried about the horses.
Yeah, I know that they're stunt horses and that at that point they had stopped tripping them with wires, I think. But again, this is filmed in Spain, and who knows what the animal cruelty laws are there.
There are a few times where a horse rolls over a couple of times.
Yeah. I mean, the horses, you do see them getting back up after the falls, but it's still a little difficult to watch.
Yeah.
But, and there's one horse that's the brown horse.
Yeah, this one.
And it must be a really good stunt horse because, like, five people, or maybe it's cursed because like five people get killed on it.
Whenever you need somebody to be knocked off the horse backwards and for the horse to keep going and not notice, this is the horse you want.
You go with the brown horse.
So Thulsa Doom has two henchmen, which I'm going to call Lemmy and Tim Conway.
Because that's who they remind us of. Lemmy's a giant guy with a leather jacket and one of those mustaches. You know what I mean.
And Tim Conway is a dude who looks like Tim Conway.
Except he's super muscular, so it's like Dorf on steroids instead of Dorf on golf.
And he uses a hammer. And they get killed.
Yes.
One of the hammer guy gets killed through a Wile E. Coyote-style trap.
Yeah, but also hammer guy is the guy who is Thulsa Doom's right-hand man who raised the giant snake that he had for a pet. So it's sad to see him go.
I need to retract that. It is not a Wile E. Coyote-style trap. It is a spy versus spy style trap.
Oh, my God. It is spy versus spy.
Because he sees Conan's Mongol hat, and he says, I'm going to hit that. He hits it, and that triggers
the trigger that makes the spear swing around and stab him.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then Lemmy comes up and he fights Conan. He's got Conan down. But shiny ghosts Valeria shows up to save him.
Right. And then Conan notices that Lemmy is fighting him with the sword that Lemmy took off of Conan's father when he enslaved him.
Oh, let's go back to the beginning of the movie.
Back to the beginning of the movie. We'll get back to that. So he kills Lemmy with his father's sword.
And then he goes after Thulsa and
kills him.
Like, Thulsa has a speech, but including one where he says, my son.
Yeah, because you got to get your Star Wars reference in here. It is 1982.
But he just chops his head off and shows him off to the cult, and the cult leaves.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. And then we're done, except we have a closing credits call where we see Conan as an old man on a throne, and Mako says Conan had more adventures.
Yeah.
Come back next summer when we see him hanging out with Grace Jones.
And Wilt Chamberlain.
Because we had to find somebody bigger than him.
Yeah. We need big, weird people to be on the screen with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Also, after having said that, it's nice that they have more than one black person in the next Conan movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because this one, we only have James Earl Jones. There is not a person of color in a crowd scene.
And it's shot in
the background of a bar, nowhere.
It's shot in Spain, which is not a million miles from Africa.
I don't know. I'm not a geographer.
Well, let's go to an area of your knowledge that you are a specialist in, which is forging swords. This movie starts with forging a sword.
Right. And as you know, we've watched a lot of Forge and Fire, which makes us
experts
on forging.
Yes.
So the first thing they do is they melt down a whole bunch of steel. And instead of, like, taking a hardened piece of steel and heating it up and beating it into shape, they just pour it into a sword-shaped mold.
Which I'm fine with.
Yeah, it's fine.
Like, they still do forge it a bit.
Well, they take it out of the mold and then they hit it with a hammer for a while. You see them carving some decorations in it. And then when it is red hot
and it's time to quench, the heat treatment, I don't know if you guys know, is very important. It is dramatic moment in every Forged in Fire.
Right, because if you plunge your sword into a vat of something that is slightly the wrong temperature, or your sword is slightly too hot, it will do bad things will happen.
In the first couple seasons of Forged in Fire, the main theme was never quench your sword in water.
Never.
Quench it in oil, which...
That is heated.
Which means that it will go from the temperature that you want to the temperature you want.
Yes. What they don't do that. They just plunge Conan's sword into a snowbank.
A snowbank.
Yes, that cannot be good for it. That's going to cool the metal really fast. It's going to make all of the inside of the metal real grainy and sandy.
Yep.
And it's not going to be good.
It's a lovely sword, but...
It's beautiful, but it does break off as soon as Conan hits it with his own Atlantean sword.
Yes, the Atlantean sword. The first thing Conan does with it is he hits it on some stone to knock off the gunk. And I thought that was a really good strength test.
Well, it's not about what your sword does to the stone, mm-hmm. but about what the stone does to your sword.
Oh, I see. I understand now.
So then at the final battle, when he's fighting Lemmy, he notices that Lemmy has his father's sword. And then the sword breaks off when he hits it. Probably because it was quenched in a snowbank.
Yep.
That's my theory. Although he does take the broken part of his dad's sword and wave it around, and he does use his father's sword, what's left of it, to kill Thulsa Doom.
Eventually.
When he gets there.
Mostly in this movie, if you want to decapitate someone, you just wave your sword at them.
Oh yeah, heads fall off left and right. It's easy to decapitate somebody, except...
Thulsa Doom, where he has to really hack at the neck a few times.
He has to hit it 4 times before the head comes off, which is actually much more realistic.
Yes.
And also, he's using his father's broken sword, so maybe it's not as heavily weighted and it's harder to cut a head off.
The angle, too, because he's holding Thulsa Doom's head by his silly wig.
Which is dangerous. That could come right off at any moment.
So he doesn't really have the length of the sword. The leverage isn't as good.
Yeah, it could take a while.
Anyway, this movie rules.
It is. This movie.
Oh, the sound. You know what rules about this movie? The soundtrack.
Oh, yeah.
Legendary
score. The score for this movie is legendary. If you are playing a game of Dungeons and Dragons and you are the kind of person that wants background music, I know it's the kids today are all using video game scores for that and stuff. But you can go straight to the source with the Conan the Barbarian score.
Straight to the source is right. This
and Carmina Burana. That's all the music you need for your Dungeons and Dragons game.
John Milius, I learned from IMDb, wanted Carmina Burana in the movie when Thulsa Doom first shows up. But he found out that it had been used in Excalibur the previous year.
And every fantasy movie since.
Yes.
Because it's really good. I think that might be all we have to say about Conan.
It's a really good movie.
It is a really fun movie. It is a good movie. It is what I thought up until Lord of the Rings was going to be the high point of fantasy filmmaking.
And
because it came out my freshman year of high school or maybe sophomore year. So it was hit me heavily in the midst of my, oh my God, I want nothing but swords and sorcery in my life phase.
And I just love how good Arnold Schwarzenegger is in a movie where he really isn't trusted to deliver dialogue because that makes him just be a physical presence.
Yeah.
And you buy it.
Oh, yeah. They did the same thing in Terminator. The Terminator's not out there speechifying.
Yeah.
All right. It is the time. Now is the time on the show when we grab a movie from the box to see what we're going to subject you and ourselves to on our next podcast. And Monty has drawn a card.
I have drawn a card. Dun, 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 dun. Very exciting. It says, Wizards of Demon Sword, Fred Olin Ray.
Oh, dear.
So
I don't know anything about this movie.
I know one thing about this movie, and Fred it's the Olin word Ray. Fred Olin Ray. So I'm guessing it's going to be bad. Riff for a second while I look it up.
I think it will probably... Okay, here's my guesses. It's going to be kind of short. It's not going to be a long watch. I don't know how it got written down on the list. It's from 1991.
A warrior teams up with a young girl to help free her imprisoned father and fight an evil wizard for possession of the magic knife of Akbar, which grants its owner unlimited power.
The magic dime of Akbar?
Magic knife of Akbar.
Oh, okay.
The cat.
Uh-oh. I don't like the looks of this. The cast includes...
Lyle Wagner as Lord Kura, Russ Tamblyn as Ulrich.
Oh my God, I am in.
Lawrence Tierney as Slave Master.
Not the same Lawrence Tierney that won Drag Race UK, tragically.
Michael Berryman as Highwayman number one.
All right. You know, any film that has Michael Berryman in it, I am into. He is a delight. That's probably why that movie got written down, is because he's right there on the box cover menacing what appear to be the Barbarian Brothers.
Yeah, the picture makes it look like a Michael Berryman movie, which
I'm always in favor of that.
What else do we know about this movie? It is 90 minutes long. It is rated 2.7 on IMDb.
You can't trust IMDb ratings. Those are made by teenagers. Nobody rates, no adult rates films on the IMDb. Don't believe those ratings.
It's Wizards of the Demon Sword. Who should rate?
Wizards of the Demon Sword.
I want to know what teenagers think of this movie. Like, this is,
So anyway, that's our next movie.
Yes, it is.
We're hoping to be able to find it on streaming somewhere. If not, I am 100% certain that Scarecrow Video carries it, because they are the best.
Here's the Wikipedia page. Premise. Ulrich's Russ Tamblyn's daughter unites with Warrior Thane, Blake Maynor, against Lord Kura, Lyle Wagner, who covets the Knife of Akbar.
I cannot wait to see Lyle Wagner.
Production.
In a fantasy movie.
Fred Olin Ray says the film has its genesis with sets left over from Roger Corman's The Mask of the Red Death.
Those are good sets.
The sets were going to be torn down, so Ray decided to use them for a film. A script was written, actors hired, and Ray shot 2 days of a sword and sorcery film.
Well, I'm pretty excited about this because Mask of the Red Death is one of my favorite Corman films, and I taught a film class on it, so I am super excited by that.
He then planned filming the rest of the film. They only needed 4 days and had 5 days less, 5 days use less of the camera equipment.
Ooh.
So Ray decided to make another movie, Bad Girls from Mars. Reception. According to Ray, Demon Sword, quote, tanked financially, unquote, in part before the film wound up at Troma, who, quote, ripped him off, quote. So this is a Troma movie
that
by Fred Olin Ray with sets from a Roger Corman movie.
This thing has a pedigree, and I'm looking forward to seeing it.
Me too. Okay, bye.
Bye.